Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's Columbus Day here on Sports Time Radio, and yeah, I get it. Now Columbus turned out to be a big, gigantic pile of crap and whatever else you want to call them, but all that matters is the kids get the day off school, and that's all they care about. So if you'd like to call into the podcast, talk to Dan and I. By the way, I'm the Big Jack. He's Dan the Man. If you'd like to call in and do that, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so swing on over there anyways. Check out what's going on. You never know what might pop up. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link. Get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan is the man with three E's.
So, all right, Dan, let's see. I was so busy telling you stories that I didn't even bother to realize where the heck I wanted to start today, but... Oh, you know, I guess we can jump in on the baseball thing. And, you know, right off the bat, Dan, how big of a must-win is this tonight for the St. Louis Cardinals?
It's huge, but I don't know. I'm not going to say the Nats are going to sweep, but I don't think it really matters. I think the Nationals are going to win this one.
Yeah, well, you know, humorously on Friday, I told Schomburg Stu that if the Nats won both games in St. Louis, they were going to sweep the series. And he laughed at me, and then I believe he called me a bunch of names. It was almost like having Mr. Fantasy on the show when that used to happen. But, yeah, he chuckled at me, kind of told me I was stupid. And now they're up 2-0, and I honestly believe this is the Cardinals' only chance to win with Jack Flaherty pitching. You know, he's their ace. They need him to have a Jack Flaherty-type game, you know, seven strong innings, keep the Nats offense down and hope they can, you know, the Cardinals can get a couple runs off of Strasburg, who has also been really good. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure how it's going to play out, but I think the Cardinals are in some serious trouble here.
Yeah, and I was off my game because I was, for whatever reason, thinking we were going back to St. Louis. But I forgot we're headed to Washington.
Yes. Yeah, as the wild card team, yeah, they don't, you know, they're on the road against everybody. So, I'm assuming it's set up to be a quality game. You know, I know the Cardinals have made some lineup changes, and honestly, I am searching for them, but you know how my internet likes to mess with me when I want to start looking for things here. You know, like I do believe that Matt Carpenter is out of the starting lineup, and I think they plugged Jose Martinez in, which probably means Tommy Edman has moved over to third base. So we'll see here in a hot minute here when my stuff wants to work for me. But
I got it for you.
It's to the point where they had to make a change, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, here it goes with Dexter Fowler leading off. Colton Wong at second. Batting second. Goldschmidt third at first base. Ozuna in left. Jose Martinez in right. Five. Yadi Ketchum at six. Like you said, Edmund moved over to third. Batting seventh, and Paul DeJong is at short, batting eighth, and then, of course, rounding it off with Jack Flaherty pitching.
Yes, because Joe Madden's not the Cardinals manager, so the pitcher gets ninth. Again, like I said, I'm not surprised they had to make some kind of change. You know, Martinez has been their best hitter, and he's only been getting it in bad a game as a pinch hitter. So kind of makes sense, right, even though they did put a left-handed bat in Matt Carpenter on the bench.
Yeah, but you've got to imagine he's going to be in there later on.
Yeah, I do know if the Cardinals get the lead, they'll put him back in. Since you did manage to knock off the Cardinals lineup, I know Victor Robles is back from injury for the Nationals tonight too. Do you happen to have their lineup handy while I'm putzing around here?
Well, oh yeah, I could start backwards since you mentioned Robles, but I'll start at number one with Trey Turner. Leading off at short, Adam Eaton in right, Rendon at third, batting third, Soto in left, batting left-handed in the cleanup spot, Howie Kendrick at second, Zimmerman at first, Suzuki catching, and then Victor Robles batting eighth as the center fielder, and the second leadoff man of the night will be Steven Strasburg.
Woohoo! So, yeah, and then, obviously if the Cardinals can't find a way to win today, they would have to win tomorrow. They would be relying on Dakota Hudson to extend the series there. But I definitely think they have to, they have to figure out how to get the Strasburg, which, isn't going to be easy. He's been probably the Nationals' best pitcher in the postseason, wouldn't you say?
I mean, I honestly didn't think he would come to that level, but yeah, he's been pretty much on fire since he came in relief that one game.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of funny because I think, maybe I'm a little off here, but this is kind of the Nationals team we thought we were going to be for the past, two or maybe even three seasons with Bryce Harper? I know people who have been picking them to go to the World Series for the past 5 years, and they couldn't get out of the first round. And now all of a sudden, nothing against the Yankees or the Astros, but overall, the Nationals have looked like the best team when you kind of combine, the hitting with the pitching.
Oh, yeah, and I was going to say, I think this is the team we expected back in 2014 to just run away with it, only to get backed up by the Giants, but not to be the dead horse. And I think it is pretty cool that they're finally at that level where they're just dominating.
So, yeah, and, I mentioned Strasburg. Like you said, he had the one relief appearance. So he's been in three games, two starts. He's 0-2 with a 2.40 ERA over 15 innings. So he's definitely been, Scherzer's numbers are a tad better. He has a game in hand. He's been in four games with three starts. He's 2-0 with a 1.80 ERA over 20 innings. But, yeah, I don't think you could go wrong with either guy there. And, oddly, the only starter who struggled has been Patrick Corbin, and that's been mostly out of the bullpen where he's made three appearances. So, maybe they were just better off leaving him in the rotation. And their bullpen has been better, which is a huge thing. All of a sudden – Daniel Hudson is a lockdown closer after being you could almost call him a journeyman type setup guy. But, this is the kind of thing, baseball is the one sport that seems to give us these things, right? Where it's a guy who, he's a really good setup guy, but he can't close. And all of a sudden he's this lockdown closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of odd how that ends up working out. We've seen that here in Chicago with Carlos Marmol. who, I mean, I just thought the natural progression would be from amazing closer or setup man to lights out closer, and that never happened. And then, you know, my guy, been with him, drafting him since Pittsburgh, Tony Watson. But you put him in that closer role, and it just hasn't really worked out.
Yeah, you know, and looking at, you know, Hudson, you know, he's been in the majors for 10 years. People may not remember that. Six teams, you know, he was with the White Sox, the Diamondbacks, the Pirates, the Dodgers. Started last year with Toronto before he was, you know, before he was shipped off to the Nationals. And interesting, all it took to get him was a minor leaguer by the name of Kyle Johnston. And, you know, once he got to the Nationals, he set a career high in the season for saves with six. He had never had more than five before. He pitched in 24 games, had a 1.44 ERA, and was 3-0. So I don't know what clicked. I mean, he was solid with Toronto, 6-3 with a 3.0 ERA in 45 games. Did have a couple saves for them. But, I mean, yeah, he went from solid setup guy to almost lockdown closer just in the matter of being traded. You know, and I know, you know, everybody's wondering now, well, what did they get for him? Who's Kyle Johnston? All right, Dan, I can tell you that after Johnston was traded to the Blue Jays, they assigned him to Dundalin, which is their high-class A team. He made four starts, pitched in six games that covered 19 and two-thirds innings. He was 1-3 with a 10.07 ERA. So how's that for a trade?
That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, and he's a 23-year-old right-hander, Johnston is. So he's been bouncing around the minors for, you know, 3 years now, and hasn't really made it. You know, high class A is the best he's done. You know, maybe he'll progress and end up being something, but, you know, you're looking at a guy who's still probably 4 or 5 years away from seeing any major league time compared to you know, a guy they got who's closing out games for him. And, you know, we've got another guy here, Dan. Hutton's going on the free agent market after these playoffs. How's he doing money-wise? You know, he made $1.5 million this year. How you think he'll do next year when those contracts roll in?
Ooh, he's definitely getting up to the 5-6.
So, yeah, another guy who picked the best possible time to go out and have a pretty much a career year, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and now, you know, this one, Dan, you know, on the other side here, and this is always a tough one to kind of say or kind of figure out or however you look at it. And, I get that it's just kind of a wide open thing here, but what do the Cardinals have to do to win, more or less, to get themselves back in this series?
The next stop will be Oak Forest.
They have to dominate. I mean, they need to shut down everybody, not just Adam Eaton. I mean, potentially, you've got an entire lineup that's going to knock you around, with the exception of Adam Eaton.
Okay. You know, now I did not know this when I asked you the question. I think I figured out the problem here, Dan. In two league championship series, the Cardinals have four hits, and two of them are by Jose Martinez as a pinch hitter. The only other Cardinals to get hits in either of the games, Paul DeJong had one, and I think that was game two, and then Paul Goldschmidt had one, which was that the one that broke up the Sanchez no-hitter, or no, Martinez did that. So, yeah, the Cardinals actually have four hits in two games, and two of them are pinch hits.
How is that even possible?
So I guess it's just pretty clear that they have to hit, right? So.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, Dexter Fowler, you know, has got on with a walk, and Colton Wong has two walks. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, I get it. It's not a lot of at-bats. I mean, you're looking at, you know, 6, 7, 8 at-bats for most of these guys. But, you know, you'd like to think they would have at least one hit, right, to get a little something going?
You would think they'd have, like, 5.
So, you know, so, yeah, that's because, yeah, I mean, when you know, you kind of look at it, they're pitching. You know, I mean, Wainwright was really good in his start. Nicholas was really good in his start. He just ran into Sanchez. You know, all the, you know, the only reliever to give up a run has been Gallegos. So, you know, I mean, their pitching has been just fine. You know, they've been matching up really well with the bullpen and getting out of situations. For 2 games, they have walked a few too many guys. You know, they've had 6 walks in 2 games, but, you know, it hasn't killed them as much as their bats have. So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of if they want to win, they got to hit tonight, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I just – this just baffles me looking at this that, yeah, they have 4 hits in 2 games and Jose Martinez has 2 of them. That's just nuts to me. I don't believe that. I mean, I almost wouldn't believe that at all. You know, if I told you that, if you told me that, I'd probably say, "Nah, yeah, you're kidding me." But all right, kind of switching it up here, Dan. On the other side, apparently all the offense is in the American League, huh? What, the Yankees won the first game 7-0. And then the Astros bounced back. And what did they end up winning last night? Was it 3-2?
Yeah, it was.
Because I was long in bed by the time they hit the walk-off.
And I think I turned out shortly after the tie.
So yeah, that seems to be where we're kind of swinging the bats. It's a travel day for them, so they're headed to New York. And now, did you see the matchup? I'm assuming it's Garrett Cole for who's that? The Astros. But I didn't see if the Yankees are going with Luis Severino. You got a favorite in that matchup?
The Yankees.
Oh, you do like them with Sexton? I thought maybe you would go the other, or with Severino. I thought maybe you'd go the other way with Garrett Cole on the mound.
Yeah, I mean, you picked the Astros to win the World Series. I picked the Yankees. So I'm going with the Yankees all the way.
For one game, though, I mean, it wouldn't be a shame if you said the Astros were going to win one game. That wouldn't be like Barry and your guys.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Garrett Cole definitely has the track record, you know, the streak kind of going for himself. But I think if anyone's going to break it, it's going to be these Yankees tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon.
So, yeah, and then did you like – and I'm really disappointed I missed this. I don't know – where I was when it happened, or I might have just been watching the football game. But how did you like your guy CeCe coming in to get this one out?
I mean, they've had him on the cameras for, like, what, every single game, just sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
So I thought it was pretty cool to get him in. I would still like to see him get more than just the one inning or one batter.
Yeah, he's that guy being his last year that every time they play, we're going to get camera shot after camera shot of him no matter what. You know, it's going to be the, you know, oh, look, here's CeCe sitting in the dugout. This could be his last game, or, you know, this could be his last whatever, like they, you know, they like to tend to do there. So I'm sure we'll get that the whole time. But, yeah, I ended up catching it on Twitter that he came in. And I don't remember who posted it. But the guy was a little sarcastic about it, you know, kind of like, oh, well, let's see what CeCe can do against the Astros. And I'm guessing he was an Astro fan, obviously. And, yeah, he came in and got the out, and that was it. So, you know, a nice little setup there to get him, you know, through the – did he pitch in the ninth or the tenth? I don't even remember.
I don't remember. I forgot to watch it this morning.
Yeah, so did I. So I was really tired. So just one of those things that happens when you work the lovely hours that I do, and Dan works way too hard. So, you know, we run into these time to time. But yeah, I mean, you know, so far, you know, nice even series. I was a little surprised. Were you a little surprised that they blew, you know, realistically, even though they're your pick, that they kind of blew Zach Greinke out the way they did in game one? Are you surprised he couldn't keep it closer?
Yeah, I was, but I was also surprised how he kind of got his butt handed to him in the previous series.
Yeah, he, you know, it's odd to say when, you know, you've got the big three like they do, but is Greinke the weak link out of this rotation?
I feel like he is. You know, it's the way Verlander and Cole have been going, but I mean, you know, has assimilation into this organization been an issue? You know, is there like a comfort factor, or is it again down to the fact that he seems to perform at the best when he is considered the number one, or now he's number three?
Yeah. Well, do you think it's just possible that this is a bad matchup for him? I mean, you look at the Yankees, and I mean, you know, I know the bottom of the lineup is a little strange when you get running into Urshela and, you know, your guy Cameron Maben, who we don't always look at as offensive juggernauts. But, you know, the top of it, I mean, they hit you with LeMahieu, Judge, Torres, who has really proven himself to be one of the best players in baseball. You know, Encarnacion's a threat to go deep every time. Brett Gardner's a smart veteran hitter. You got Gary Sanchez. You know, we know your guy Didi has struggled, but, man, you know, you never know when he's just going to get hot and come through. This may be the best playoff lineup out of any of the teams, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's not amazing. Counting Stanton. You know, Stanton, who seems to get hurt walking from his, you know, walking from his locker to the dugout. So, you know, I don't understand that, but well, you know, and I know they did get Aaron Hicks back, so you add another bat to the lineup there. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's you know, it's to the point where it's like every freaking Yankee who walks out is a, you know, is a threat to hit the ball out of the ballpark, especially, you know, then you top it off with the two stadiums they're playing in. I mean, both these places are yokes, you know, when it comes to trying to keep a ball in the park. So I won't be surprised tomorrow if the weather's decent if each team hits five home runs, no matter who's pitching. You know, especially with the way fly balls go out of Yankee Stadium. I mean, you hit a pop-up to right field and it's a home run. So, but, yeah, the Yankees have what? They have 1, 2, 3, 4 home runs in 2 games already. So not a bad ratio to get started. And now, do you know, I didn't see anything, Dan. Is Stanton done for the series? Have they ruled him completely out, or is he available to pinch hit, anything like that?
I didn't even double check on that. He could start game 3, though. So he's not out for the series, but
okay.
you know, I mean, you hope the strain, the quad strain is as bad as it can be.
So, yeah, it's just been kind of, I guess almost the bust of the season for him for whatever reason. You know, this was just the year he couldn't stay healthy.
And only the best year that the Yankees are having.
Yeah. It was such a weird year for them because, I mean, you know, if we would have sat down preseason, Dan, and I would have told you that Stanton would miss the most season, they were going to lose Andujar at third base for the entire year, Didi was going to be out till the All-Star break, you know, Gary Sanchez was going to miss a bunch of games, Aaron Judge was going to be hurt for a good number of games. You know, they knew they weren't going to have Severino till September. You know, I mean, if we just ran through that Yankee injury list with the way it was doing, I don't know if I would have even picked them to make the playoffs.
No, I mean, I would have pegged them to go the route of the Red Sox, and the Red Sox should be in this position, not the Yankees.
But yeah, you know, somehow, you know, they managed to keep it together. And, I wish I would have saved that guy who wrote the article about what a bad signing DJ LeMahieu was. I should have saved that guy's name because I would love to know what his thoughts are now about that signing. And I know he wasn't the only one, but he was the guy dumb enough to write the article, and really kind of waving the banner for Troy Tulowitzki, who was quite a huge joke this year. But yeah, obviously, you know, LeMahieu was huge. Your guy Cameron Maben played really well for them. Gio Urshela, who couldn't hit on any of the spots he was at before, you know, he was supposed to be the Indians' third baseman for the next 10 years, couldn't hit in Cleveland, couldn't hit in Toronto, put on the pinstripes, and all of a sudden figured out how to hit. You know, and then they got contributions from, you know, guys like Clint Frazier and Mike Houseman and, you know, just guys like that. As you go along, you're kind of like thinking, wait, who? But, it worked out, and here they are, and, you know, they're relatively healthy. This is a fighting lineup. I mean, Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander or not, this is a big-time lineup to have to go against, and it's going to be a tough series for the Astros to win if they win it. You know, and I know, you know, the Astros themselves have a very good lineup. Obviously, you know, Jose Altuve is an MVP. You know, he should be a multiple-time MVP, but they screwed him out of one. Bregman has proved his worth and could be an MVP this season, depending on how the voters kind of look at it. Jordan Alvarez has already been given the American League Rookie of the Year award, not officially, but they've already decided that he's going to get it. Granted, he has no hits through two games, so I would like to see him get a hit. Michael Brantley is always dangerous. So is George Springer. But, you know, the key is, can Carlos Correa do anything? You know, he hit the walk-off home run, but, you know, other than that, I mean, he doesn't really kind of look like he's where he should be. And I know he's had the back injury, and those aren't easy to come, you know, to make it back from. Maybe last night was the thing that got him going. But, you know, there are some big-time weaknesses here. I know they're hoping that Kyle Tucker will hit and be the third outfielder. Otherwise, you're looking at Jake Marisnyk and Josh Reddick, who I know I don't believe Dan is a Reddick fan at all. You know, and then their catching is that Robinson, Chirinos, Martin Maldonado combination. And, you know, I get that they both call a really good game and they're solid defensively, but man, you're not getting any offense out of either of these guys. Especially when the pitching tunes up like this, neither of these guys are going to be able to produce for you. Unfortunately, you know, this is just kind of where you are. It's not like you can go out and get get another catcher. And you bury these guys at the bottom of the order and you just kind of hope that they do their job behind the plate. And there's enough hitting around them where you know they can where they can get away with it. You know, I mean, you're looking at the lineup, and I know it's kind of scuffled through two games with the exception of Altuve. You know, besides him, everybody else is hitting about 250. So, you know, they kind of need to get going. And, you know, they have a quality offense, too. I just think the Yankee lineup 1-9 is a little better. You know, not that Houston is bad. It's just 1-9, the Yankees offense is a little better. And, you know, they may be a little better than everybody. And that's where, you know, your pitching comes in because I think the Astros pitching is much – I think the gap between the Astros starting pitching and the Yankees starting pitching is bigger than the gap between the Yankees starting lineup and the Astros starting lineup. So I think that's where Houston kind of has to make their hay there. And we'll see if they can do it. But not off to a good start. I mean, you didn't want to see Zach Greinke just get shelled like he did. You know, that's definitely a huge negative. And then you got to wonder – you know, when game four rolls around, do you come back with Zach Greinke or do you go with Wade Miley? You know, Miley hasn't had a lot of opportunities here. I thought he was going to be fine as a fourth starter, but, you know, he didn't appear in any of the first two games. And I know, let me see what he's got for the postseason combined. I don't think it's been very many outings. Yeah, here, Miley's actually only appeared once and pitched 2 2/3 innings. He didn't give up a couple runs, so he didn't get off to a great start there. But, yeah, you've got to kind of wonder if, you know, could he come out and give you a five-inning start, maybe only give up a run, and keep you in a game to where you can turn it over to your bullpen and not have to bring a Greinke back for a game four. You know, he did go six innings, and I know there are, you know, the off days here, but I don't know if I was into his performance enough to want to see him come back at four. I guess a lot will have to do with the fact of if they win tomorrow, because then they kind of have a game in hand. And it wouldn't be horrible if they end up losing game four. Sadly, I think if they lose game three, they probably have got to come back with Greinke and hope that he's the key to their success. As odd as that sounds, I don't kind of know how else to really kind of look at it there. It's like, okay, well, what do we what do we do or where do they go? I mean, you know, you can't bring back Verlander for game four. So it'll be very interesting to see how the Astros try to kind of shake this out or kind of manage this. And I honestly don't know. I think they might, they're my pick, and I'm going to stay with them. But I got to tell you, after that game one kind of fiasco, I am a little concerned that they might be they might be in some trouble here against this Yankee team, which, you know, is obviously a very good team. And I don't know. So, uh-oh. Oh no, here we go. Come on.
Where are we going?
Oh, I had to sneeze on you. Sorry. That's what I was waiting for. So, yeah, did I cover that well enough for you while you were on break? You were out there doing whatever?
Oh, yeah. I just hope Frozen's not too loud for you.
I need to throw some more of my wonderful luck at you. I always send you the NASCAR thing, the 5-cent NASCAR thing to play. And this week was Talladega. So I put my five guys in, and four of them went out of the race. You know, and that's kind of Talladega. That's how it goes. You always have the big wrecks. To be fair, my fifth guy did finish second. But, yeah, four of them wrecked. And I actually still only missed out winning. I think I would have won 8 cents or something. I only missed out by about 30 points. So, you know, maybe if my guys could have stayed clean and stayed in the race, I would have even picked up maybe 3 cents on a win or something. But yeah, I just thought it was hilarious when I went in and double checked after the race, and I was like, oh, you're kidding me, four of these guys wrecked? Like, yeah, that's my luck. So
yeah, that's how it goes. I actually checked my email a little too late yesterday. I had three-year-old soccer to attend.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Are you coaching soccer?
Yeah, I'm never doing that again.
So, but yeah, you know, I mean, the thing about Talladega is, you know, it's exciting. You know, Ryan Blaney ended up getting the win. It was a photo finish. The driver I had left was Ryan Newman. He finished second. So yeah, and they had the last big wreck they had was with about 10 to go, and a car actually flipped and did a 360, landed back on its wheels. So could you imagine, just, you know, imagine you're going 200 miles an hour down the straightaway, you get in a wreck, you go into a wall, another guy hits you, and the next thing you know, you're flipping over. Kind of an interesting ride. The driver was fine. You know, they checked in with him afterwards, and he didn't have any issues. And, you know, it was cool to watch, so that was a big plus. But, yeah, it was nuts there at the end with, you know, everybody – you know, and I mean, obviously guys are going for the win, and, you know, these kind of things are going to happen, and, you know, they're racing for points and trying to advance in the playoffs, and, yeah, it was just kind of like, yo, here we go. So, yeah, and it got rained out yesterday, so they had to run it today. That was the big point of contention there. I think they finished stage one yesterday, and then the rains came in.
Oh, so you still had to get your picks in yesterday then.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just one of those kind of days at Talladega where, you know, it ends up that way. Yeah, you know. Ryan Blaney gets the win, so he automatically moves on. He was one of the playoff drivers, so he moves on. But, yeah, it was Ryan Newman second, Denny Hamlin third, Eric Almirola fourth, and Michael McDowell brings it home fifth. So a big run for a couple of the smaller teams there. Even as you get through the top ten, Austin Dillon was sixth, Corey LaJoie was seventh, Chase Elliott eighth, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. ninth, and Ty Dillon rounds out the top ten. You know, a lot of the names, you familiar names you're with. Kyle Larson was 39th. Jimmy Johnson was 38th. So they finished way down. Kurt Busch was 28th. Martin Truex Jr. was 26th. Brad Keselowski was 25. And then here's Dan's guy, Clint Boyer, finishing 23rd.
Ugh.
So we'll see. I don't remember where they're going. I think they go to Kansas next week, and it's an elimination race. So they're going to, they're going to have to pick it up. I don't know. I wanted to see where your guy Clint Boyer is, if they've updated this. He is currently 11th, Dan. So he's going to have to make up some ground. Looks like he's 11 points out of qualifying for the next round. And that's if these are updated and are accurate. That's what I'm looking at right now. So, yeah, he's got some work to do if he's going to move on, but we'll see. But, yeah, luckily I got to see a little of that – got to see the last, I don't know, maybe 75 laps of it because of the rain out. So uninterrupted, you know, I wasn't flipping around to see what else was going on where else.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, when they're on numbers, I'm all over the place.
Now, before we switch topics, Washington or the Cardinals tonight, who do you have? I'm going with Washington.
Yeah, I like Washington tonight. I just don't see any reason that the Cardinals are all of a sudden going to magically start hitting.
Yeah.
So I'll take Strasburg and Washington tonight, even though I think it might be close. If Flaherty's on, you know, it may be a 1-0, 2-1 type of game. So we'll see how that goes.
Now, before we get into the NFL, I just wanted to get your take. Are you all that into the NHL yet, or has baseball playoff kind of edged that out for you?
Yeah, no, I'm all in on the baseball playoffs. Like, I'll watch, you know, like when the baseball game goes to commercial, I'll flip over to like the NHL game that's on the NBC Sports Network, and I'll watch a minute or two of that before the baseball game gets going again. But yeah, I'm not fully in invested in the NHL yet. We got to get through the baseball playoffs for that to happen for me. So.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. So, but going to yesterday, we had soccer early. We did our grocery shopping. I was able to make it home in time. The nice thing with the Bears being pushed around is, of course, I wish I would have thought about it better, but, locally here, we've gotten the most Vikings games that I can remember in past years. So it's something that's kind of exciting for me. I'm not going to sit here and tell you because I'm not a diehard NFL fan to begin with, but I actually sit through a Vikings game where, honestly, I get bored with Bears games, but yeah, I don't know. It's neither here nor there. So it was kind of exciting to kind of get back and sit down and be able to watch the Vikings. I just think of wanting to tweet Mr. Fantasy with skull hashtag Viking horn, but so you know why I don't do that, because he's not on there anyway. That was pretty cool, kind of get into that game. I honestly didn't think I was going to watch the whole thing because of the way the game has gone for them the past couple weeks. So it was exciting to kind of see them beat up on the Eagles, who they lost to in the Super Bowl at home in Minnesota. Or wait, no, that's not how it works, but to get to the Super Bowl. But, other than that, I didn't watch a whole lot. What was your take on yesterday's NFL extravaganza?
Yeah, well, I tweeted out the fact that, obviously it's a joke that the NFL is going to review pass interference because they don't call it when there is pass interference. So it's just kind of, at this point, it's just kind of stupid that they even have this rule. So, that was the first, and that was in the other early game. That was the Kansas City Houston game that happened.
Well, let me ask you before you move on, or you kind of continue. So when it comes to a pass interference call, they can challenge it. But if the pass interference happens and they don't call it, can they not challenge that?
No, they can challenge that as well.
Oh, okay.
And that's what happened yesterday. They had a play in the Chiefs-Texans game, and it was quite clear. Once you saw the replay, it was incredibly clear that Travis Kelce intentionally picked the Texans defender to free up the Kansas City receiver who must have went 40 or 50 yards with the ball after he caught the pass, just being completely wide open. And you were wondering, you were like, wait, who blew the coverage or who did this or who did that? And then you see the replay and it's like, oh, okay, now I get it. It was pass interference. So the Texans throw the flag. They review it and say it's not pass interference. So it's kind of like, okay, why do we review these you're not going to call them. And I guess the overturn rate on these is like under 10%. It may be even lower at this point. So it's just, you know, I mean, I don't even know why teams would waste their time using their challenges on a pass interference, because it's quite clear the league isn't going to overturn these.
Now,
I know
analytics doesn't play a huge part in the NFL, just ask the Browns. But you almost need an analytics department strictly for, like, flags. Or not flags so much as, you know, throwing your flag out there for the instant replay.
What they kind of do anyways is, you know, the booth looks at it before the coach even throws the flag. You know, they make sure to go over it a couple times before they tell him if they want him to throw it or not. So it you know, it's pretty well covered as it is. But yeah, it might not be a bad idea if you had an analytic team who broke down the numbers and said, well, you know, when this is challenged, the percentage goes like this, you know, or maybe this is a more favorable challenge to make instead. So, you know, teams might want to look into something like that and see if they can win more challenges.
it's kind of stupid to be honest, that a team would even have to consider something like that. Because, like, when you said the pass interference doesn't really – was there a 10% chance that it could be overturned? I just think, you know, like you said, what's the point of the instant replay?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you and I have seen it dozens of times now, or probably hundreds of times now, in not only football but baseball, where, you know, it's kind of like, well, wait, that was – they got it wrong. You know, why aren't they overturning this? You know, and you're kind of like, wait, if I can see it on my television, how can, you know, these guys with, you know, with actual video replay specialty equipment not realize what the hell is going on? But yeah, apparently they don't, they can't, or whatever.
I don't know. That's just the one part of all of sports, except for maybe hockey. I haven't really know a whole lot about the instant replay in that. Granted, it's not really seen a whole lot unless it's a goal. And usually they're pretty on with that. But, I mean, it baffles me that the billions of dollars that each, you know, let's just go NBA, MLB, and NFL, that they make, that the instant replay system seems to be so archaic. I mean, do they have Zenith TVs up there, or is that what they're using?
Well, it does look like that sometimes when you look at, like, the NBA replay and they pull out the monitor from the desk and it's like, wait, what is that? Is that, you know, is that like the old black and white TV my dad used to use in the backyard, or, you know, where are they getting this stuff at? So, but yeah, it's just, you know, and then, I mean, it's, you know, it becomes more, you know, like I wasn't a fan of either team. I mean, I didn't have money on the game or anything like that. I was just watching it because, you know, I think the other game was, you know, the Viking game was a commercial, or this just happened to be the game that I was on, because I'll go back and forth like that. And, yeah, it was like, I'm going, oh, yeah, okay, there it is. And, you know, he clearly runs into the guy. I can see it sitting on my couch. Everybody else can see it sitting on their couch. And the NFL replay official in New York or wherever he is can't see it, and he's being paid for it.
Well, doesn't that sit there and kind of ring true to what we've kind of said from all along, is that there's somebody in there just kind of, while there is the review, it gets, you know, there's like a higher up that says no.
Yeah, you know, and especially with like the NFL, I wouldn't be surprised if they have, oh, let's call it an agenda.
Yeah,
to
that's
where,
what I'm looking for.
Yeah, you know, to where they don't want, you know, they kind of, you know, like they put this rule in because they had to, because of the ridiculous call at the end of, or non-call at the end of the Rams-Saints game, the NFC Championship game that, let's face it, that cost the Saints a chance to go to the Super Bowl. So they had to do something about that. So they did it. But obviously they don't want to review all these calls. So if they don't overturn them, teams are going to stop throwing the flag. So, you know, they can say, well, look what we're doing to try to, you know, make this better or make that better or whatever. But, you know, in reality, they're just, yeah, blowing smoke. So, you know, then the other thing, I mean, I doubt you got to see this game, but what a dumpster fire the Dallas Cowboys have turned into. You know, the second game yesterday, they give up what I think they were down 21-0 in the first half, and they managed to come back and make it close. They ended up losing 24-22, but they lost to the Jets. So,
well, didn't some hotshot sign in with the Jets? I forgot who it was. Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, but he wasn't much of a factor.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was just, I'm actually a little surprised. I thought maybe, you know, as bad as the Cowboys played, that it might be where Jerry Jones finally reaches his breaking point and he fires Jason Garrett and he takes over the head coaching job. But not yet. Apparently, he has a job. So we'll see how that works out. But yeah, it was just kind of a just a little bit of a strange day. I mean, you know, they had Washington played Miami, which are probably the two worst teams in football. And I was a little disappointed that it wasn't on, because I probably would have enjoyed flipping to it just to see what it was like. So, you know, but yeah, that, you know, that was kind of, you know, kind of weird. And then, you know, Houston goes out and beats Kansas City. You know, luckily my Seahawks came back and got a big win over Cleveland. You know, but yeah, then, you know, the 49ers went out and kind of dominated the Rams. You know, I don't know too many people, you know, like I know people were picking San Francisco, but I don't think anybody was picking them to kind of like dominate the way they did. You know, then Pittsburgh with the third string quarterback ends up beating San Diego in the nightcap on the road. So, yeah, it was just kind of one of those strange NFL days you get where it's like, oh, okay, you know, how did I pick this, or how did this go, or – you know, again, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of the NFL. It's very hit or miss, and you know, the only team it seems like you can really count on is the Patriots.
Yeah, but they have an old man for a quarterback. How can you?
Yeah. So yeah, I've heard that over and over, that it's kind of like, you know, well, look, he looks terrible. You know, he hasn't looked good, and it's like, yeah, but they're 6-0. Who cares? You know, I mean, when you know, winning kind of takes care of all of that.
Yeah, how come he doesn't run the ball like
some
young guy? I don't know.
Yeah, but he can't run. He just can't run away from guys. Yeah, okay, they're 6-0. Who cares? So, you know.
How can we then hand it off to a receiver to hand it off to the running back or vice versa to run out there and catch his own pass? Why didn't he do that? Sorry. Vikings tried to pull that one. It almost didn't work.
Did they? So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know what I mean? It's one of the things that, you know, kind of makes the NFL interesting from, you know, from week to week is you just never – you never really seem to know what the hell you're going to get. You know, I mean, obviously there are those teams that, like, you think, okay, you know, no big deal. You know, they're going to win or this is going to happen. But, you know, like, I know San Diego hasn't been very good. But I don't really know anybody who was picking Pittsburgh to go there with a third-string quarterback and get a win. And they did get a win, and it turned out to be a little easier than people thought.
And are they still in San Diego? I thought they moved to L.A.
Oh, yeah.
Am I wrong?
Los Angeles. Thank you. No, thank you. I'm still so used to calling them San Diego that I'll probably be calling them San Diego from 10 years from now. So you're correct.
Yeah.
It's Los Angeles. My. So.
Hey, well, you didn't talk about the Houston Oilers. I mean the Texans. Oh, no, wait. That doesn't make any sense. They're the Nashville or the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. So here, but before we go, I know we're running out of time. I don't know if you saw this one, but it's being reported here that Rick Honeycutt is going to this article here says he's going to be reassigned and he won't be the Dodgers pitching coach anymore. I read that he's going to retire. And interestingly enough, the name I see here, Dan, is Mark Pryor is the guy set to take over as Dodgers pitching coach.
Wow. That's pretty damn cool.
So, you know, we'll have to see if there's a, you know, an official announcement sooner or something like that. I want to go back. I thought I saw this site said he was going to retire. Yeah, our favorite site here, this MLB trade rumor called Honeycutt retiring. Oh, here you go. This is why he's being reassigned, Dan. He expects to remain in the organization in a special assistant capacity.
The best role you can have in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Now, do you think this is kind of the fallout from them being eliminated so quickly this year?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, it all came down to the pitching. Kershaw kind of wasn't, and
yeah, it looks like the Dodgers are really close to finalizing a deal with Andrew Friedman, who is their president of baseball operations, I guess since they don't want to say general manager anymore. But I know the Dodgers front office is like loaded with guys who are former general managers. So maybe that's why they do it that way. But, you know, it looks like he'll be around. So we'll see if, you know, what they try to do or how they try to do it. But, you know, it's a gigantic disappointment there for the Dodgers this year. Oh, there you go. This brings me to the United States. I'm going to come back tomorrow at 5:30 to do a minute, but that was all in the deal. There was a cool stuff that I kind of checked what's going on up there. One is there, hopefully, we can talk about on your Facebook page. One of them is over there. Go ahead and give that a like. Don't forget to put a tweet that is at Sports Time Radio. First, feel free to put a damn one down on Twitter. We don't mind that at all. While we stop talking to you, we're going on the live. Thank you for being there. We greatly appreciate it. And remember, the podcast is available for you to listen to anytime you want to. Sports.com.
Sports Time Radio.com.